Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, it is your partner, Big Boy. Interested in giving back to your community while making new connections in your neighborhood? Introducing Neighbor to Neighbor, a California volunteers network that empowers you to take action, contribute to local needs, and be a part of something bigger than yourself. Visit CANeighbors.com to learn more about how you can get to know your neighbor and strengthen your community. Neighbor to Neighbor, it takes a neighborhood. Hello.
Hello and welcome back to yet another edition of the Chelsea Podcast. I'm Chaz. I am, as ever, joined by Mooch. How are you, pal?
I'm good.
What's going on?
Not much. I'm just enjoying the result. Still.
Yeah, I mean, we were in our preview show. We were slightly. I don't think there was an awful lot of optimism, was there? So it was nice to have our fears not come to fruition for once.
Yeah, no, that would it's the carrying on the tradition of this yo-yo season with our emotions. Yeah. But let's enjoy the high while we can.
Exactly, all the fun of the fair. We're very pleased to welcome back Daniel Childs from the Son of Chelsea Fan Channel. Daniel, thanks so much for joining us again. How are you, fella?
No worries. Yeah, all good, all good. And like you guys, to be honest, yeah, just. You have to kind of savor the wins when you get them and, you know, not try and be too downbeat about things because they don't come around very often. So I'm sure we'll be miserable again in a couple of weeks. So
that's
like,
the spirit.
You know, it's got to be the case at the moment with Chelsea, right? Like, you've got to enjoy your wins when you get them.
Yeah. And in fairness, I felt like there was a fair amount to enjoy. You know, we were talking about the fact that, obviously, the squad seemed to be getting thinner and thinner, and you know, it hadn't been a particularly impressive performance against Brentford. So to have a relatively strong performance, regardless of the result, really was something that we were all pleased to see, I'm sure. So what, Dan? What did you make of the selection with this one? I mean. Really, I suppose the team picked itself because we have really got to that point with injuries now. It's very difficult to put in any replacements or give anyone a rest. But did you think it was the right team when you first saw it?
I wasn't too surprised by the selection. As you say, you're sort of forced into some of these changes. So I think the big question for me pre-game was whether he was going to stick with maybe a three at the back. It would, you know, some rumours about Thiago Silva returning to the team. And then, you know, do you start maybe Mikhailo Mudryk? I'm sure that's a point we'll get to later. But other than that, no, there was no part of me that looked at that team and thought, I'm outraged or I'm shocked. Or, you know, there's nothing, you know, I just sort of went, that's what's kind of available. And you kind of hope for the best, don't you? You hope that this will be a night when they turn up. I think that most of the selection was kind of what we've been predicting in recent weeks, because as you say, when you've got that level of injury crisis, I think that you're kind of forced into it. I guess in some ways that can be a positive because it kind of clarifies the mind, I think, for Pochettino, in the sense that compare it to last season when there were too many options and you kind of completely baffled by how you're going to keep all these players happy.
Yeah.
There was enough. I don't think there can be anything about that team that really, really offends you, to be honest.
Well, I'm pretty sure that some people still would have chosen to be offended by having the likes of, let's say, Raheem Sterling in it. Not me, but certain previous guests would probably have been having conniptions, but I thought the boy did well. Anyway, we'll come back to him a little bit. Just as a side, just as a sort of adjunct to that, Mooch, we're back again in a situation where we're without both of our... I mean, it seems to be such a regular occurrence. It's really more the it's more the norm than not, where we didn't have either of our we don't have either of our first choice fullbacks available to us. Recent Chile. Now, notwithstanding that, obviously, Gusto has proven to be a very strong replacement for Rhys, and that Cucurella is back, and of course, there's Alfie Gilchrist as well waiting in the wings. I mean, do you? Sure, at what point do we say, you know, these guys, you know, as good players as they are, and I love them both dearly, at what point do we say, you know, maybe we have to start looking at other alternatives here? I admit, this comes with an adjunct. Rhys may well come back stronger from his operation, touch wood, let's hope.
Well, I thought Cucurella in the side, I was happy to see him there, happy he did well, but he, you know, he was returning from injury, and I thought it might be a bit soon, but I suppose Poch had no other options, really. But I think also, to answer your question, I don't know if we are looking for other options, because I think we've got two great options in both of those positions now. It just so happens that those two of those options are injured for, you know, 40%, 50% of the season. I'm not sure if this is an anomaly. With Rhys, maybe it is a bit different. But I think the way Gusto's playing, I think you could even argue he's not a replacement. Is he our number one now? Is he going to be our number one moving forward? He's 20 years old. He's been fairly consistent. You know, there's a couple of games maybe where I've gone, oh, but... he's growing into the role, and he seems to be headed in the right direction. Cucurella as well is a great player, and you know, we paid a lot of money for him. He can defend, he can go forward, and he's a great replacement when Chile's not there. But also, you know, we paid 60 million for him. Mm. He could be our first team wing back.
It's a very good point. I mean, and you make the point that actually, you know, if everyone's happy to play, you know, if Rhys and Chile know that they're probably not going to play every game of the season, and you can keep the other guys happy, and they can stay happy because they know they're going to get so many games, then perhaps there isn't really a problem. And we just utilize, you know, which of the four are fit and ready to play when we have to. But yeah, it's a good point, Daniel. What's your view on it? I thought Gusto was really good again the other night. What's your view? Do you think there's a case to be made for Rhys not being an automatic choice when he comes back? Let's put it that way.
Well, the issue is with Rhys, and I do wonder if the last time I was on this pod was post his injury before the surgery. I feel like we were discussing Rhys James, and it's. This is the issue with a lot of Chelsea players in recent years, is like availability is a player's greatest strength, and reliability comes into that as well. And, you know, a lot of the discussion around Rhys James, it feels like in recent years, has been about theory. And we've been sat around going, well, if he was fit for a full season, he'd be Chelsea's player of the year. If he was fit consistently, he'd be the best right back in the world. And unfortunately, theory doesn't pay the bills. Theory is not, you know, what you can build a squad around. And until I see evidence of Rhys remaining fit and not breaking down every 2 or 3 weeks, then unfortunately, that's where he is at the moment. And the difference with Gusto is extremely durable player, someone who has very quickly come into the Premier League and looked capable of adjusting to the league, the demands of the league. Him being 20 is ridiculous to me because he looks already very, very mature. He does remind me of a Cesar Azpilicueta type signing, just a very, very competent player. But actually, as the season's gone on, he's gone beyond being just a competent fill-in to a player who is now creating goals. He is a threat down that wing. Yeah. I mean, the two balls he put in for Nicholas Jackson against Aston Villa and Brentford are crosses that if Reece put in, if Trent Alexander-Arnold put in, they'd be being shared every single day on social media. So he's adding that attacking output to his game as well. And I think that's really, really encouraging. I think the lesson that Chelsea have to take is to try and find a gusto on the left this summer. I'm not as, you know, positive about Cucurella. That's not to say I'm going to have a go at him for Monday, because it's very unfair. He survived a full 90, 95, 96 minutes after barely playing and kicking a ball since December. So that's not kind of the big issue. I do think Cucurella has some fundamental flaws as a player that I just think are very hard to compensate for. I think, you know, we saw it in the Jacob Murphy goal. He rushes into a challenge, loses the challenge, and it, you know, although of course it is a worldie, that's not my point. It's, you know, I think there is a frailty to Cucurella that I have seen consistently that concerns me. So for me this summer, I'm more looking at who are Chelsea going to bring in as a backup to Chilwell that we can then, you know, rely upon over the course of a season, because that's kind of my big concern. But with Gusto, he's first choice currently, and I'd prefer Gusto keeps playing rather than rushing Reece James back, because there's still kind of that fear for me that he's going to be called up to the Euro squad late on, and Southgate's like, I'll take him anyway. And you know, there may be that instinct, that kind of thing with Southgate, where he'll pick players that he kind of has worked with before rather than whether they're entirely fit. So
I think in the right back position,
you know, it's really going to be who's standing, because you know, fitness across all of the players he's used before seems to be, you know, at the moment it looks like, I don't know, he could even go with Joe Gomez. There's so many difficulties there. So I suppose that is a possibility. I think you're a little bit harsh on Cucurella. For me, that was his one error in that game. Okay, it led to a goal.
Yeah, my point isn't really about Newcastle. Like, to be honest, I found the criticism of Cucurella after Monday weird. This is a guy who's barely played. It was a high-pressure game where Chelsea needed a performance. And I think one of the things I've liked about Cucurella this season is his aggression at times. Like, he is getting closer to players. It feels like he's trying to be more commanding. Sometimes that does bring a bit some risk. But I still don't think in the long term he's a player that I'm going to trust over the course of a season. That's kind of my general point of Cucurella. I don't think his level is high enough for me. And I think he does have errors within him that are going to cost Chelsea over the course of a season. That's kind of, it's not Monday. Monday, he was fine. No, I was happy with him, and it was good.
I think we're all good on that. I think, and the difference, I think, is that for me, Chile is the definite number one as a left-sided fullback or wingback. Whereas Gusto, even if he isn't quite at his peak against Reece's peak, he may not be far off that. And of course, he's only 20 and he's still developing, etc., etc. So I absolutely take your point. Let's go back to the game. Other than the first literally couple of minutes, I thought we started pretty well, and obviously we scored very early. And not only that, it was from a really nice passage of play where there was a lot of movement off the ball, one-touch passing. And, you know, to finish off, we have to give credit where it's due. It was a tremendous, and it was clearly meant, finish by Jackson. Mooch, what did you make of it?
Yeah, he's growing into the role. I'm happy to see him sort of get a few more goals that aren't from just, you know, that aren't from like that one Tottenham game. I hope this is building confidence, and we have the player that we bought from Villarreal at the start of next season as well. So I'm happy for him. I want to see more of that, and I can see him staying in this side even if we do sign a star striker, whether it be Osimhen or whoever else, because he can play off that wing, which I think he was doing a bit more in this game with Sterling sort of
going central a bit.
So I think, you know, there's he's got options in that front line, and I think I actually prefer him coming off the wing, because I think there's a little less pressure on him, and when he's got the less pressure on him, he can pull out finishes like that.
I think there was somebody, I rewatched the game on the website, on the club website, and a commentator on that said, you know, he scored in Didier Drogba's first season at Chelsea, he scored 16 goals, and Jackson now has 12. Now, don't get me wrong, I don't think that, I think that's where the comparison sort of ends, really. And of course, Didier had a bit of a, he didn't play in every game, he had a lot of competition that first season, and you know, I don't think he played in every game. So,
but we also like a different beast that season as well.
100%. You know. And also, I think the expectations on Jackson and the pressure on Jackson have been a lot higher. Albeit he didn't come with such a reputation and a price tag as Drogba did. But overall, again, it was a performance that was full of desire, running. Yes, sometimes he can look like Bambi on ice, but for me it was a very positive performance. Where do you stand, Daniel?
Yeah, I'm,
is
I'm
he
very,
coming
very,
into his own now?
Yeah, I'm very, very happy with Nicholas Jackson. I think he's been an amazing signing, really, when you've given what we had in that attack before, right? Like, this is the thing that I've always gone with Jackson, is if you frame Nicholas Jackson as the ready-made finished article, if you compare him to Chelsea's best ever forwards in their prime, then obviously he's going to fail. When you judge him for what he was when we bought him, where people had very little expectation of him, I think there was concerns that he's barely played any football at a top level. Like, why are we investing in this player? Is he actually going to impact the first team? And to see how he's developed and taken on a lot of criticism, when you actually look at his numbers, I mean, 12 goals in all competitions, 31 games. For Villarreal between 2021 and 2023, before he joined us, he scored 13 goals for them in 48 appearances. So he's close to matching his entire goal tally for Villarreal. And then 9 goals in the Premier League this season from 20 starts. I mean, again, this is coming from a player who didn't have a lot of football, who has had to deal with a team that isn't as brilliant and amazing and talented as the Jose Mourinho 4-5 team. The reason why Drogba's first few years don't kind of get mentioned in his narrative at Chelsea was because we were winning. He wasn't playing every week. And it was one of the best Chelsea teams in history, probably the best Chelsea team in history. So that his struggles early on went completely under the radar, other than, you know, some of the narrative early on about him diving that got him booed. Other than that, it's nowhere near the pressure and expectation on the shoulders of Nicholas Jackson. And when you actually factor all of that in, and also consider the fact that Kai Havertz scored 9 for the entirety of last season as Chelsea's basically centre forward, he's matched out already. And I was hearing some nonsense stuff over the weekend that somehow Chelsea should regret letting that player go. I completely disagree. You know, Chelsea have upgraded, I think, in the attack, not only with Nicholas Jackson, who you can see with time and patience can get better. And as you say, I do agree that actually him on the left looks a lot more, he seems a lot more freer in that role. And I've seen some comparisons made to a Solomon Kalou, a Florent Malouda, that type of player that maybe could work off a more central player who might be coming this summer or might come in the future and will chip in with 10 to 15 goals across the course of a season, who's going to maybe thrive off of not being the main man. So I think for what he's brought, Chelsea looked like a better and more accomplished football team when Nicholas Jackson's playing. If you watch what he does off the ball as well, I think his movement's intelligent. The chance that Sterling messed up just after the second goal was off the back of a really intelligent Jackson knockdown, basically from his head, from a direct pass forward. And, you know, all these things I think sometimes get overlooked, but they are, I think, representative of a player who has developed very quickly. And actually, the club deserves a little bit of credit for taking a punt on him, because he looks like a really shrewd piece of business for around, what, 35 million?
Hmm. So, I mean, that goal, we talked a lot on here about how going a goal ahead or scoring really at any time always seems to give us an injection of confidence, as you know, as it probably should. But we had a really purple patch that followed over a few chances, a few shots on target. And we seem to be getting much more than we have done for the majority of the season. We seem to be getting bodies in the box, which I really like to see, you know, putting pressure on an opposition defence. But then same thing happened. I don't know if it was just concentration or that we'd sort of gassed ourselves a little bit, but we seemed to take our foot off the pedal. We got a little bit sloppy, started giving the ball away. And that led to their goal. Admittedly, it was a great finish from, you know, a chance that not everybody would have taken. But is that down to our inexperience? Or is it, you know, am I being a bit harsh, and is it just the ebb and flow of the game? Mitch, what do you reckon?
Well, I think we were a bit hot and cold, but I also think that we've done quite well. Sort of the two goals Newcastle scored were great finishes. And we kind of suffocated them of any other huge chances. I think that's credit to the defence, which, I mean, admittedly, we've leaked two goals, but as we're saying, we got the performance and the result, and Isaac's finish and Murphy's finish were great. So Cucurella was aggressively pressing. Maybe he shouldn't have been in that situation, but I also think aggressively pressing is what we should be doing. It doesn't always come off. So I don't want to be too critical of the team, especially when we need to savour these wins and enjoy it while we can.
No, I mean, and you know, I should underline that I think it was a strong performance all round. I thought we were the better side, and as I say, for most of the game there were a lot of these positive moments. It's a shame. I just think the reason I bring it up is because it happens quite regularly. We seem to have a purple patch in the game, which may or may not come after or alongside scoring a goal. And then there is a noticeable drop-off. And I think it's down to experience, and I think it's something we can fix. It's just something that I bring up because it seems to happen a lot. And again, I suppose, you know, game management, that sort of thing comes with, you know, getting through to the end of that first half. A goal up and no goal from them would have been massive. I do think they had more to say in the first half, Newcastle, than they did in the second. But I think, you know, it would have been a huge statement if we'd have gone in a goal to nil up. Daniel, do you think I'm being a bit unfair? Or, I mean, as I say, overall, I thought it was a great performance. So I want to make that clear.
I do agree that this team, throughout the course of the season, have had these really strange lapses where they seem to shoot themselves in the foot and do really wild things in bad areas of the pitch, whether that's one-on-one with the keeper, when a simple kind of layoff to someone in space would be key, or in this case, I mean, I gave him credit, but, you know, Malo Gusto deciding to do a keepy-up competition in the centre circle when he doesn't need to, and it was a case of Chelsea suddenly looking quite rushed and panicked. And sure, it does fall to Isak, who of course is a really, really good forward, and I actually do give credit to the centre-back pairing of Chalobah and De Zassi and the whole team, really, because what Isak likes to do, and he is someone that not only can be a brilliant finisher like we saw there, but he really drifts into space really well. And that's how Newcastle stretch teams. And he was very limited in that ability. But just that moment there when we have several chances to clear the ball and we fail to do so, it's that moment of, yeah, maybe it is a lack of maturity and experience, but there is also just maybe players needing, and it is a criticism we've leveled at this team consistently throughout this season, of just a level of leadership and responsibility. And sometimes the ball just needs to be cleared. Like, it just, you know, even if it does mean it's going to go for a throw in and then we press we press forward and we eliminate danger, it's just 100%. That sometimes maybe wanting to overplay things, or again, it's you'd like to think it comes with experience, but it has happened a majority of this season, it feels like, where Brentford last week was another prime example of it, where And this seems to happen as well post the interval, which is weird. It happened pre-halftime because I usually worry post-halftime what Chelsea are going to be like. It was the sort of thing I expected post a team talk. But it's those moments that can really define a game. And I think it is of credit to this Chelsea team that I was worried after that moment, because just before the halftime whistle, Chelsea started to look very shaky and they started to give the ball away. Not that Newcastle had any amazing chances after that equaliser, but it just... all the signs of what had happened a week before at Brentford started to show. And I was concerned what the post-halftime Chelsea would look like and whether they could rise to that level again. So I think it's credit to the players that they did rise and respond to that adversity, because in other occasions they haven't.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose the thing is that there are times when we look like we're on enough of a roll that we could really be... I'm not saying this was necessarily the case on Monday night, but we could be two or three ahead as a result of these purple patches that we have. And I think when we'll know that Chelsea really are a potentially, you know, title trophy winning squad again, is that when we start to do that, when we start putting chances to bed, putting teams to bed, when we're in those periods of dominance, which I think we are. I don't want to go too far. I don't think we were, you know, utterly, it's not like we were all over Newcastle at any given time, but just I felt that, you know, we were with a little bit more calmness and composure, we could and should have gone in a couple of goals to nil up rather than at 1-1. However, we came back very well. This was one of those weeks where Mr. Cole Palmer decided he was going to walk on water. I've not been critical of him, but I have been, I've been worried about the hype, and I still am to a, or wonder if he sort of is really deserving of all the hype. Now, I mean, you can't argue with his stats this year, and it was a really impressive performance from him this time. I mean, still gives the ball away too much for my liking, but he was so involved. He clearly was hungry to be involved. Most of what we did that was good came from him or from Gusto or from Jackson or a combination of those guys. How rate his season so far for me, Mooch, and tell me, and is he now, he's clearly undroppable from our team, but is he essential to our team, would you say?
Yeah. He's been great. He's been phenomenal. He's slotted into this side, and he's our best player. Like, you know, I don't want to get all Tim Sherwood about it, but
he's our most talented player. He's arguably our most talented player. I don't think he's been our best player. I really don't, and I don't think he's been phenomenal either. I think he's been he's played really well. There's been, you know, I want to see him do it
I don't think...
You can't get a player to do... You know, certainly not a player of his age. I don't expect or need a player of his age to be playing like he played, or, you know, at 110%, or like a 9 out of 10 every single game. But there's been a lot of games where he's been... He's not really... I mean, Brentford, I don't really feel like he was part of that. You know, there was... His contribution was insignificant in those games. And that's the difference. That's what I'm trying to say. When he's on it, he's excellent. And I think in a couple of years, he's going to be excellent most of the time. I just think at the moment, he's not quite that. But on Monday night, there's no question. He had a fantastic performance and he deserved all the plaudits. Daniel, tell me to shut up.
Yeah, I mean, I have to disagree with the criticism. And it's not to say that Cole Palmer doesn't have flaws within his game. I mean, he's 21 years old. Mm. Actually, compared to some players in his squad a little bit younger than him, he actually didn't have a lot of football before joining Chelsea. And that's what I think makes this season even more remarkable, of how quickly he's taken up a role at a club that has been looking for someone of his ilk for so long. And he looks so... There's such a lack of fear, it looks like, when you watch Cole Palmer play.
Assured.
And it does. Yeah, and also I get the sense watching him again on Monday, when like there's been so much negativity around Chelsea. And I do think a lot, not all of it is just like people being negative for the sake of being negative. I think there are genuine concerns to be had around the future of the club and the direction it's heading in at the moment. But he feels like he's dragging Chelsea into something better. You watch Cole Palmer and can see a future, maybe not a Premier League title winning team, but at the very least a team that is going to get back to where we were 4 or 5 years ago, when, you know, at the very least we're, you know, winning domestic cups, we're going to have some big moments, we're going to see a team that we are proud of. And I think that the numbers, again, just I think illustrate how effective and how superior Cole Palmer is to players in our attack in recent years that have fallen.
Well, here's another thing to mention as well. Of course, if you'd have put Cole Palmer at his age this season in a team with established players of quality, you know, like let's say the Champions League winning season, or the likes of N'Golo, if you'd put him in a team alongside the likes of N'Golo Kante, Cesar Azpilicueta, Rudiger, you know, just a more experienced side, I think he'd be shining even more than he is.
In some ways I understand that, but his numbers are superior than even that period of Chelsea. Like, I saw a stat the other day that this is the first time Chelsea have had two players, and that's Jackson and Palmer, reached double figures since the Lampard 1920 season. So that kind of proves to you how actually underwhelming the attack has been overall. And that, you know, that takes away the Tuchel Champions League win. Because the attack, even under Tuchel, underwhelmed. You know, in totality, when you look at his whole era at Chelsea, it was arguably his biggest failure at Chelsea was the inability to improve the attack. And this is what I'm saying about Palmer, is that you look at his numbers again, far superior to a player like Kai Havertz. I think it made the point early, and it's been reiterated a number of times. I think he is the player we thought Kai Havertz was going to be. And even in games where, like you say about Brentford, right? Brentford, he has a really bad miss in the second half that he should be scoring. But his ball that he basically takes off Mudryk and puts in the cross that Zassi scores from earns Chelsea a point. In the Carabao Cup final, he creates at least one match-winning moment for Conor Gallagher. He is, in that second half, I think he stood up for Chelsea and was creating chances, creating havoc. Looks like a player who wants the ball in difficult moments, compared to some other players who I think this season have kind of shrunk in those moments. And
problem for me, actually, Daniel, the problem for me is that there's been far too many games where I do think he wants the ball, and I do think he has tremendous self-confidence, and that's great. But given all of those things, there's been too many games where, you know, he'll provide one moment that makes us go, oh, look at that. And this happens all the time with him. This is my problem. Because he's got that quality, because he really is a talented young man, there'll be one moment in a game, every game, or two, where he'll do something that will that you'll remember and it will stand out for you. But for a lot of the rest of those games, he's really sort of slightly obscure. Now, this wasn't one of those games, and I still think I'm being devil's advocate here, and I'm being at my harshest, but I do feel like, and again, we've said this over and over again, he is only 21, and as you say, in a team that's not particularly functioning, he's standing out clearly. And I think he's going to turn around, and I do think he is going to become, you know, he's going to become a great player. And I'm just slightly wary that at the moment he's not there yet, but we are assuming he is a phenomenon. And I'm not quite sure that's the case. That's all. Anyway, let's move on. Second half, I thought we were talking about Sterling earlier on, and we were talking about him playing more centrally with Jackson going further to the left. Now, he had a few chances in the game, and you could argue in many cases he was a bit unlucky, or you know, with just a beat more time, he might have scored a couple.
Chaz, I need you to have the same energy that you have for Cole Palmer as you do for Raheem Sterling.
Hang on a minute. Hang on. I'm playing devil's advocate.
I know. With Cole Palmer. I'm enjoying.
I think he's a great player.
Twisting your nipples on this.
I think he's a great player. I'm wary of hyperbole. Is all.
No, I agree. But
Raheem Sterling. Now he's not. Again, there's the end product has not been spectacular, really, for Raheem. What did you make of him, Daniel, in this game? He's never really worked for me as someone who plays more centrally. I always think he's much better coming in from wide. What did you think of his overall game? Are you still willing to give him the benefit of the doubt? Is there a better option that we should be starting?
I've been a fan of Sterling years before he even came to Chelsea, and I was very happy when we did sign him. And I think when you look at the numbers this year, he has improved from last year. Sterling has always had a tendency to be quite wasteful. And I think it's, again, one of those perception things where we're not Man City fans. So for years, we would watch Sterling at his best, either score against us, score in a big game. So you'd have this perception. It would, you know, the great, wonderful comps. And even when I'd look a little bit deeper and you'd look at his goals and you'd look at just the raw numbers, like you'd go, wow, one of the most productive Premier League wide players over the last decade. And I think that is true and accurate. But City fans, we would talk about this wastefulness that, again, wasn't so much of a problem in a Man City team that had Kevin De Bruyne, you know, that had players like Aguero when he was there, Bernardo Silva, who would change games, and they'd create so many opportunities under Guardiola, it didn't really matter. They'd still be battering teams 4-5-0. At Chelsea, it becomes a bigger problem when we aren't as good as them. We're not going to create as many opportunities. So those misses can be very costly within the course of a game. I think my biggest problem with Sterling this year is on two fronts. I think defensively, he has let the team down at times. I think his lack of tracking back has cost us on a number of occasions. And it also ties with his inability in front of goal, because one of the biggest criticisms of this Chelsea team is their lack of experience, their lack of maturity. They don't have enough older heads who are really leading the team and adding that level of conviction in the final third or defensively, which they need to maybe guide some of the younger players. This is where my big problem with Sterling comes in. At that moment, when he's put through one-on-one at goal and we've just scored a second, it's in those moments where Sterling's experience should pay off. He's done this hundreds and hundreds, probably thousands of times in his career, where either he scores or he lays it off to Cole Palmer, because we know in those moments they can change a game. And luckily on this occasion, Chelsea did get the third goal. But we've seen this is not a coincidence anymore. Sterling going one-on-one with the keeper, having an option to pass to a free teammate to score a goal. We saw it earlier in the season against Aston Villa, wasn't it? At 0-0, where he could have played in Nicholas Jackson. He doesn't. We missed a chance. Gusto gets a red a couple minutes later. Wolves is, I think, the worst example we can have, right? And it's just, it's criminal. Like, it's a goal that I'd expect a Conference League to score. a Conference League team to score. Like, it was that, it was sometimes, and this is not just a Sterling thing, this is a general Chelsea thing, you do sometimes wonder how incompetent and it we are in a final third. Like, it's quite impressive at times how we managed to mess up chances. It's almost like an Olympic, you know, sport of our own. But it's in those moments where Sterling has to provide that. And when he isn't providing that, and he isn't providing protection for his fullback behind him, I then question, well, if this is a younger team where we've got a player like Mikhailo Mudryk, who I have criticisms of, but then comes on and provides an end product, and actually, if we're looking towards the future, what's the justification for keeping that player in? Under Frank, when we had Willian and Pedro and Giroud, those three players added that, especially Willian in his final year at Chelsea. I think he scored his highest goal tally at Chelsea in his final season, and he added moments of inspiration, moments of experience that led that team, that helped young Christian Pulisic, that helped Mason Mount, that helped Callum Hudson-Odoi when he was around the team. I don't see that enough from Sterling. And maybe off the pitch, I can absolutely see it where, you know, whether it's, you know, Chuck Kumeka or Noni Madueke or Mudryk himself, or Cole Palmer, especially, who knows him from Man City, I could see why a lot of players would look up to Sterling for what he's done in his career and what he's come through, and how he's been one of England's best attackers, one of the best English players we've developed in the past, like 20 years, right? But I don't see enough from me to justify him remaining in the team, because it's in those moments that it's just simple. Like, he has to be burying those opportunities. And when he's not, it lessens the argument for not playing Mudryk, because the argument against playing Mudryk is he's raw, he's erratic, he's not polished enough to play. But then who's playing in front of him? Raheem Sterling, and he's not taking those opportunities. So it doesn't, if Sterling's taking all those opportunities, then I think we're having a different conversation.
Yeah. Decent point. Mooch, where do you stand? I mean, and also, where do you stand on Mudryk, who came on, seemed to play more centrally again, as he had done a couple of times before. Looked very lively. Took his goal extremely well. I think Daniel makes a very compelling argument. I'm not sure it's quite over for Raheem yet, but what do you think?
No, I don't think... It's not over for Raheem. He's a quality player. His decision-making has been diabolical at certain times this season. But again, he's also scored... He's our third highest goal scorer, something like that. So he's still getting goals for us, just not now. You know, that the Sterling Mudryk thing is... Do you remember Dumb and Dumber? You know that scene where they're on a bike and you can't do anything dumber, you go pull something off and just completely redeem yourself. That's what Mudryk was. Like, he's got these moments where you're just, what is this guy's football intelligence? But then he just turns into sort of, you know, prime Pelé and just fucking walks nutmegs, turns around the keeper and finishes like Sterling should have. So, you know, like, it's great to see. I'm frustrated with Sterling. I echo exactly what Dan is saying. You know, we don't have many experienced heads in the team, and the ones that are experienced are the ones who are making these poor decisions. So that's not what you want. But again, I think it's something that's endemic with him. It's one of the negatives, but he will also take players on and create stuff out of nothing. And sometimes you've got to take the rough with the smooth. I wouldn't be starting him, especially as Daniel also said, with his defensive lack of defensive
laxity. When I say, is it over for him? What I mean is should he be out of the side? Sorry, it's clearly not over for him. Anyone can play themselves back into a bit of form, you know, or impress on the training ground or whatever. But yeah, which is whether or not he should be in the team. But I think you're definitely both making a compelling case that another, probably Mudryk, should be starting ahead of him. Let's look back again on the positives. Obviously, Palmer was man of the match. We've talked about I don't think there was anyone who was terrible, although you know, as I say, Sterling with his missed chances, but Who else deserved credit, Daniel? Who else is coming on for you, caught your eye, thought had a good game in particular?
Yeah, I think I've got to give credit to Trevor Chalobah, given this is a guy who, you know, it feels like the narrative again in his Chelsea career, the irony of Chelsea career is just, you know, is it from The Godfather? Just when I think I got out, they, you know, pull me back in. And it's like, I think it's the same with Trevor Chalobah. You know, just when you think he's about to be sold, he brings himself back into the fray and he becomes a first teamer. And that's been the story of Chalobah's Chelsea career. And I love Trevor. I think he's a brilliant player. And I think he's someone that I think has been harshly treated at the club. I think there is, and also the discourse around him has been very unfair. And I think when you actually, you know, isolate and look at his career at Chelsea, he has been a decent, competent to at times quite brilliant performer for Chelsea when you actually look at, you know, as I say, what he's done. And given he barely played for most of this season and he's come in and very quickly reasserted himself at a time of need. And I actually think it was good that Poch, as I said, went for Chalobah over Silva, because in that kind of, we were talking about early defensively, when you don't have Levi Colwell, who's been playing recently, I think it was maybe a sign again that Poch has looked away from Silva now and he looks now to younger defenders, which I think is absolutely the right decision. And I thought that the way he came in, and sure, some of the criticism for me for Chalobah was he did play a part in the Newcastle equaliser in the sense that I thought he had a chance to head the ball away and he heads it right back into a bunch of bodies rather than trying to head it away. But other than that, given this is Isaac, who is their top goal scorer this season, who's one of the best young centre forwards in world football, and given both him and De Zassi really marshalled that well, I think there's got to be credit given there. I do think Enzo obviously I think he gets the assist for the second goal. I thought he got better as the game wore on. Caicedo, I still think maybe at times it feels like goes under the radar for some of the key work he does.
Yeah, I agree.
He, from what I wanted from a defensive midfielder, and the problem is he's never going to be able to, until Chelsea win a Champions League or a Premier League again, he's never going to be able to overwhelm and just kind of go overboard with his fee. Everyone's going to talk about that fee and expect the greatest footballer ever to walk the face of the earth, unfortunately. But for what I personally wanted from a defensive midfielder, I wanted someone who's going to cover space effectively, who was going to see danger, who was going to stop attacks of the opposition and start transitions. I think he's done a lot of that, and I think he's grew into the role as the season's gone on. So, yeah, as you say, there wasn't... I think... I think Palmer was the outstanding player. There's kind of no two ways about it. I think it was a really massive moment in, hopefully, the career of Mikhailo Mudryk at Chelsea. But other than that, I think everyone was at least a 7, in my opinion.
I agree. I mean, it's a really good... I'm glad you brought up Caicedo, because I wanted to mention him if you hadn't. I think he's, as you say, that the albatross he has is this massive transfer fee he's got hanging around his neck. And, of course, he's still vaguely, I think, in the shadow of the N'Golo Kantes and... You know, arguably even the Claude Makélélés, you know, people are expecting that sort of much from him. But I thought he was quietly effective, slightly silly booking. But other than that, I thought he was at the heart of a lot of really good things at both ends of the pitch. And that is the thing that I think is what we're going to find really valuable from him. You know, he had some lovely touches in the final third, but he was also back supporting the defence at a lot of times, and as you say, starting those transitions. And he caught my eye more than Conor Gallagher did. Now, I know Conor was just coming back from an illness, but I don't, you know, when you're able to say that, that's not a, I don't think that's a bad way to go. Yeah, gents, I think overall it was a much better performance, and it's one that we can be happy about. Let's just hope now that we can sort of build forwards and take it on. We've got a few winnable games coming up, a few more home games. How are we feeling about the next four games? So we've got Leicester, obviously. We'll talk about Leicester. We're going to come back, Daniel, and talk about Leicester. But are we feeling sort of confident? We've got, I think, who have we got? Burnley, Man United, and then
Sheffield United away.
Mm. I think that's a trio of eminently winnable games, albeit obviously Man United seem to be getting a little bit more together and showing a little bit more form. Are we feeling confident about those?
Yeah.
But this is Chelsea, and this is the season 2023-24.
This is it. I'm confident we will get a performance in the cup. I think we're buoyed. We've made a final already this year, and I think they'll be up for it. The United game, I think that's going to be like our acid test to see, okay, cool, have we come through this, and is it going to be more of the same, or are we actually kicking on and developing as a side? As you say, they've got players coming into form, but I'd love to just do them, especially when I'm as confident as I can be because of the track record this season, but we should be turning a corner. We'll see.
Yeah, Daniel, just sum it up. Before we close, are you feeling confident? I mean, say for me, and we've said on the air in the last couple of weeks that me in particular, and I think Mooch as well, we feel that performances would be more, you know, positive signs are almost more important than results. But, you know, can we get both over the next few weeks?
Yeah, I think it is possible. It's you want to be optimistic that there is something left to fight for this season, which there wasn't last year. And it's weird how one win can change a lot, because suddenly, because of the inconsistency of teams above us and the potential that fifth place gets Champions League as well, suddenly the route into Europe through the Premier League looks realistic again for Chelsea. And you look at that run of games, Burnley, Man United, Sheffield United, Everton, I believe it is after that. You know, at least four of those Chelsea should be winning. And the one that maybe we won't be winning is the Man United one, because we just can't beat Man United. I think psychologically beating Man United could do actually wonders for the club, because we haven't beaten them for so long, weirdly. As bad as Man United have been, I think a massive win against Man United, I think, would be a huge boost for this current group. And hopefully we can have a good runway way up to that if we can get back to Wembley. And then, you know, you can able to put teams away like Burnley, Sheffield United and Everton, who we should be beating, because then that gives some momentum back to the team. And I think the issue that some people have had is that even in some of the wins earlier in the season, when we have put a run together, like we did over Christmas, right, is those performances themselves weren't that convincing and kind of maybe masked over some of the ongoing problems that then reared their heads again later on. So I think that's going to be the big thing for Pochettino, is wherever he can get that rhythm, despite the ongoing and never-ending injury problems he has to contend with throughout the season. And then hopefully, you know, marry some of the positives we've seen of the team getting over the line in games like Newcastle, but then also more convincing performances that then gives you a little bit more in the bank. I do think there is just a harsh reality that because of what happened at Wembley against Liverpool, because of everything surrounding the club, he is fighting an uphill battle, Pochettino. And I think that there is just a reality that when you do face a Man United, if you do win, that gives you more credit in the bank than beating Leicester, Burnley and Sheffield United. Mm. Now, it doesn't mean we don't beat those three teams, because we should be beating those three teams. But I do think something has opened up now. So hopefully Chelsea can do it, just to give us the last month or so of the season to actually feel like there is an objective to get behind, and rather than us kind of just get all miserable again and feel like we're just, you know, it's just a contract now to end the season.
Yeah, it'd be nice not to have to get all miserable again. That's certainly a thing.
But listen, we know what Chelsea are like, so
sadly, it's that roller coaster. Gents, let's wrap it up there. Daniel, we're going to have you back to talk about our upcoming cup game with Leicester, if that's okay. But we'll pause it for now. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back shortly.
If you want to advertise on or sponsor this show, check us out at playbackmedia.co.uk.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, it is your partner, Big Boy. Interested in giving back to your community while making new connections in your neighborhood? Introducing Neighbor to Neighbor, a California volunteers network that empowers you to take action, contribute to local needs, and be a part of something bigger than yourself. Visit CANeighbors.com to learn more about how you can get to know your neighbor and strengthen your community. Neighbor to Neighbor, it takes a neighborhood. Hello.